Hello, listeners. My name is Mark. If you have been enjoying the Listener Lore episodes, please come over to my separate podcast feed, Lorehammer Listener Lore. On this daily podcast channel, I will be reading one story a day and sharing your creative works with others and giving my feedback at the end. So, if you like grimdark 40k short stories, come join me at Lorehammer Listener Lore, the 40k podcast where you get to write the script.
Hey guys, thanks for listening to the podcast. If you want to support the show, visit us at patreon.com, and for as little as $1 a month, you can become a patron. Or you can buy cool Lorehammer products like shirts, coffee mugs, and dice bags at www.redbubble.com. Don't want to spend any money? Well, you can help out the show by giving us a 5-star rating and review on iTunes or wherever you listen to podcasts. You can also hop on over to Facebook and like our page, and feel free to send us a message. It's the only enjoyment Mark gets out of his miserable life.
Hey guys, welcome back to Lorehammer. Today is a quick little bonus episode we've got, Listener Lore. My name is Eric.
Jordan.
We got Jordan. We got Christian.
Hello again.
And Peter.
Hello.
Mark isn't joining us. He is no longer part of Lorehammer. Just had a couple legal issues. And
it's kind of hard to record a podcast from jail.
Yeah, it's I mean, we tried to smuggle one in, but it doesn't fold up as nicely as your intestines do, if you know what I mean. Like the arm for the mic, it wasn't pretty. Anyways, let's dive right in. We're just going to read some lore that's been submitted, and then we'll just share our thoughts. Good things, bad things. You know, we'll try and Oreo sandwich it. Thanks for the nod, Peter.
Yeah. I get it, yeah.
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 Excellent. So I'm going to read the first one. This one is a really long one, and there's like a huge conversation in it. So I'm going to play the main character, and Jordan is going to play the other character that I will introduce at some point in the story. All good?
Let's do it.
So this is submitted to us by Side. Hello, dear reader. I am Zeroth Mordrek, and I would like to thank you in advance for reading this article. The imperial credits that you have paid to purchase this novella I use to refuel my ship and hunt for new stories within this dreadfully massive universe we live in. If you have a story you would like me to investigate, or an individual you would like me to interview, send me a message at Data Expunged. I always love to hear from my readers. Now, for this specific story, I had to traverse the Eldar city of Kamora, and I was nearly killed many times. However, it only makes the payoff of telling this tale through writing even better. Enjoy the read. The consanguinity of Club Ardor. The background of Club Ardor, its master, and its denizens. Within Kamora, it is unwise to sleep lightly. Eldar society thrives off of murder, backstabbing, and debauchery. One day you may wake to wonderful news. That a rival was killed off, or that you are promoted in your cabal. Then the next day, you may be dead in a sewage drain, being feasted upon by the mandrakes and the beasts who live below. However unwise it is to sleep lightly, some Eldar still do it. The sounds of slaves screaming in an unbearable agony, chains lashing against great beasts being drugged to the pits, and the death gurgles of fellow Eldar being butchered in the streets, can cause any real Kamora citizen to want to fall into a nice, peaceful rest. But anyone who lives within 10 miles of Club Ardor are never able to sleep well, let alone sleep at all, if too close to the pulsating building. The nightclub itself is a massive rectangular structure, covered with refractal panels that twist and turn in all sorts of abstract dimensions, stretching ever so slightly into the dark, lightless sky of Kamora. The bright light it emits from all angles are blinding only in the slightest, and the lights soar into the blackness beyond some of the tallest spires of the district. Within the lights above, you can see hellions and scourges brawling one another, and within the lights below, you can see the carnage in the streets of the dark city. But only for momentary glimpses, as the bright lights shift to yet another scene of depravity. The flashing name and slogan blistering one's eyes from all sorts of angles upon the massive complex. Club Ardor, you've never been so obsessed. The sounds emanating from the club, however, are the real spectacle. A mix of pulsating bass, screeching electronic noises, seething angry vocals, and an overall intensity comparable to being rammed into by an Imperial Knight that's been shot out of a cannon. This demented sound is most certainly one of a kind, and it is why I am here for this story. The music of Club Ardor is ripped from various cultures across the galaxy, be it the sounds of the old Eldar, the Tau, the modern-day humans, or even what Chaos considers to be music. But its main grounding and roots seem to be from an ancient human form of song and dance, known as the dubstep. This genre of music relies heavily on electronics and other devices to make it music that is worthy of an ancient human ritual known as a rave. Within the rave, humans would gather in an area, holding a very primitive form of laser technology, and sing and dance along with a DJ who was playing said dubstep. These raves were described by ancient Terran scribes as being, quote, hella sick and wicked cool, furthering my belief that the rave may have ties to the occult, or maybe a primal form of chaos worship. But the sounds of this electric pulse-pounding music is what truly defines Club Ardor from any other nightclub, bar, crack den, or brothel around Kamora. It fills the club and most of the surrounding area with a non-stop barrage of blasting beats. So intense and so addictive is this music that many of the Eldar who live around the club are frequent patrons, and most who spend time in the club just once are nearly always hooked to come back for more. However, I am a Necron, and it is very hard for me to feel any sort of emotion at all, let alone addiction. So my first and last escapade to Club Ardor was an interesting one for me. But for you, dear reader, it may be the reason enough for you to go to Kamora in the flesh and see the confines of the club for yourself. I was greeted at the door by a certainly not sober Eldar. Biological scans indicated that his body was full of xenethylproxene 5 hexafacilate, a well-known hallucinogenic and excitatory substance. He ushered me inside with a single greeting. Welcome to the time of your life! I knew not what he meant by this. As I walked inside, I could immediately see the raw energy this place held at all times, bequeathed before my eye. It was a massive bar, full of nearly any substance you could use and abuse to your heart's content, be it all sorts of exotic food, liquors, and other drinks, or all manner of chemical cocktails, some of which I had not even seen before. The effects that they have, at least from some quick scans, are nearly off the charts, even when compared to intense combat enhancers. To the right, there was a massive spiral stairwell, with the upstairs dubbed Honored Guests and Staff Only, and the bottom dubbed the Vortex of Sin. From downstairs, I heard many, many screams of agony and fear. From upstairs, I heard the screams of pain and pleasure. I would have simply descended into the vortex. However, the central attraction of the club, and the reason I was here, had caught my eye, the dance floor. The club was stuffed full of Eldar from all walks of life, malformed Eldari like mandrakes, and even a few humans of sorts, all performing various hedonistic acts all around the club. But the dance floor was almost comparable to a writhing orgy of flesh and light that seemed to endlessly move in such a way that was insanely captivating. As a creature that struggles to feel emotion, I felt myself being drawn in, as if I too wanted to spasm my various appendages around to the strange, blaring electronic noise emanating from the front of this dance floor. All the Eldari on the dance floor were each moving in a different way. Some were dancing alone, and some were dancing in a sensual way with others. Some were dancing in a slow, methodical rhythm, and some were spastically moving about, as if they were hyped up on drugs. In hindsight, I realized they probably were on drugs. The floor itself was also ablaze with lights of all different colors from the normal color spectrum, and some from the other spectrums of light found within the warp. This light show was only amplified even further by three factors. First, the area above the dance floor was a three-story tall cylindrical formation topped with a dome, covered entirely with reflective paneling. Secondly, almost all of the Eldari on the floor had symbols, lines, and other sigils painted upon their clothes, or sometimes upon themselves. All of these seemed to not only reflect whatever color they were painted as, they almost seemed to generate their own in the mild darkness of the building. But the strangest source of light was the orb hanging from the inside of the cylinder. It was cruel, even in comparison to the rest of the city, and it emanated a grotesque green-blue glow from all angles, as if it were a macabre disco ball. When I focused my audio sensors toward it, I could hear it screaming. However, no one heard the screams over the blasting music. The one who was playing the music was even more crazy-looking than the scene. He was atop a booth around 10 feet above the floor that was coated from top to bottom in lights, speakers, fog machines, flesh, and barbed chains. Some of the chains had slaves hanging from them, being pushed around with the sound of the music. The thing within the booth was a very curious sight, being a nearly fully robotic being with lots of vials, life support systems, and other things of that nature rigged up to it. Naturally, I scanned this Admech-esque being, and two different scans came up with it being a human life form. Yes, a human. Behind him, there was an array of subwoofers extending up and to the sides of him. Each of them had a slave chained to it, and every time the bass pounded, they shook and writhed in agony. Some of them appeared to be already dead, and were still hanging there for decoration. I was ready to explore the rest of the club when two Eldari in gray and white armor came to me. They asked what a Necron was doing within the Dark City, and more specifically, what I was doing in the club. I explained that I was a reporter doing a documentary of their club, and they immediately took me to see the owner of this. This unexpected gesture of kindness was strange in the extreme to me, and it was only after speaking to the owner that I understood why they took me to see him. We went up 5 flights of stairs in the employees-only section of the building, and it was then that I noticed there were speakers in every room of the building, also blasting the music from the dance floor. Eventually, we hit the top floor of the 5-story building, and we came to a door that said, Mickey Masrovar, owner of Club Ardor. This name, I can only assume, would sound just like the low Gothic name, Mickey. They pushed open the door, explained that I was a reporter, and I heard a voice within say,
Brilliant! Let him in here.
The Eldar's office was gorgeous. It was full of various trophies, some luxurious, some dead, some still alive and breathing. But the most impressive thing was what the Eldar sat upon. It was an office chair made entirely of hands. Closer inspection of the hands revealed that they all came from human women. And atop this chair there were 5 spikes, upon 2 of which sat skulls from dead Eldar. The Eldar on the chair was comfortably sitting, smiling at me. He had a bald head, but what hair he did have was back in a ponytail behind his head. The complexion of the Eldar was actually darker than most of the others I had seen, and his overall composure was shrewd and elderly. The most peculiar detail about him, however, was his attire. He was dressed in no armor, had no weapons on him from what I could see. Instead, he wore a quite dapper nobleman's suit and coat, as if stolen from a planetary governor. As he smiled, I could see a singular gold tooth in the corner of his mouth. His whole aspect reeked of greed, knowledge, and power, and all 3 of these aspects of his being became very clear to me as I sat down in front of him for the following interview. Greetings, Mr. Mickey Masrovar. I am Zeroth Mordrek, a cryptic of the now-dead Hrotek dynasty. I came to Kamora to learn about your club, and more specifically, the music that comes from here. Would you care to enlighten me?
Ah, a fellow patron of the arts. Like myself, I'll gladly tell you just about anything you'd like to know.
His voice was as scummy as his appearance, and it always seemed to be saying that it knew something I didn't. Let's start with how this club came about. What inspired you to make Club Ardor into what it is now? He grinned.
Well, Xeroth, to know that you gotta know me. I was born actually upon a craft world and was, since birth, destined to be a warrior of the Eldari. However, good I was at fighting, my real love and interest was music. But the Eldari wanted me to be a fighter, not a romantic, and so I left. I ran around the galaxy past that point as a mercenary, using my money and my time to search for more exotic sounds. However, eventually, my addiction to music knew nearly everything in the Materium. So I hitched a ride with a shady dark Eldar I had met to Kamora. He planned on enslaving me and giving me to his cabal in hopes of a promotion. So, naturally, I killed him, took his armaments, and posed as him till I managed to get my own bar. I tell ya, I wouldn't have made it as far without my prior life as a warrior. These dark Eldar wretches barely know how to fight properly sometimes.
How very interesting. So you had a very prestigious life laid out for you, and you gave it all up just for music?
No, not just music. At first it was my music. But now that I'm here in the City of Nightmares, I love my life. I never knew just how much I'd enjoy the taste of a freshly tortured and abused soul.
Right. Sadly, that is a feeling I cannot reciprocate. I have not tasted anything for hundreds of millions of years. Now, you said you purchased a bar?
No, not purchased. I killed the prior owner and took it over. It had a steady enough stream of drunks, but the previous owner was a useless piece of shit. So I put him down and renamed the joint to the Sultry Slave. This was around 2 years since me arriving at Kamora, which was already in a bit of a tizzy. Like 80 years or so before that was when Vect first took control. So I was it just the right city at the perfect time, when everything was rebuilding.
So then, by my calculations, this would mean you are approximately 7,000 years old, correct?
You'd be right. You live a long time in a city like this when you stick to your own business and don't fuck around with all the stupid bureaucratic bullshit that the cabals and cults try to shove down your throat. I blew under the radar, so I've lived for quite a long while. Ain't got as much to show for it as someone like Vect, though. But that's less because of me blowing under the radar, and more because of the ethical differences between me and the Dark Eldar. You see, most of my kin are willing to do anything to reach the top, even backstabbing what few friends they may have. However, I believe that a friend is one of the most dangerous weapons you can have, and trust is sometimes way more helpful than it is deadly.
This is an intriguing concept for me. You go against the very thing the Dark Eldar are known for. How do you get away with this? How does it work?
Well, Xeroth, it all started back in the Sultry Slave. There was the occasional patron, lowly street ganger, right? Well, there was a bounty on his head, because he had enough of the gang he was with. So, some guy comes in acting all tight, saying he was gonna shoot my customer. I told him he's got one chance to leave my bar or I'd kill him myself. He didn't believe me. Look over on that wall there.
Turning around, I saw a flayed face on Mickey's wall.
That's where that went. The other patrons, and the one I saved, all had a new respect for me at that point, and they were willing to help me improve my old watering hole, add in some new attractions for the patrons to spend their time. That was when we added in the sex dungeon. A while after that, though, that's when I really understood my boy's loyalty to me. Some prick came into my bar and threatened my life. Some lowly vat-born Kabbalite dickhead. When he said he'd take my life, three different patrons stood up without a second thought and blew the guy's head clean off. His heart is in the glass jar over there.
Amazing. This sort of loyalty, is it like a code of honor, or do you have to enforce it?
I ain't gotta enforce shit, pal. I keep my men supplied with booze, drugs, food, slaves, and any other pleasure you can think of, so they keep me alive. Otherwise, they lose all of it. Nobody can run this place better than I can, but I extend the same protection to any of my patrons. If you ain't got a family there, we're more than willing to let some in some new blood, no matter who you are. That's where my number one rule comes in. You don't ever hurt another patron.
Truly, you provide all this protection and care for anyone that comes into this club?
You bet your metal ass I do. All my Ardorites in my service are frequent patrons to the club. They all are willing to do any job in the world for me, because then they're helping contribute to their favorite place and get paid for it. It's a win-win scenario for everyone involved, including me.
Tell me more about your Ardorites. Are they your arm outside the Webway?
Yes, sir, they are. Way back before the first expansion, I just called the folks who'd help me the mob. But after we cleared out a few blocks to build the first iteration of Club Ardor, I needed a real name for my men and women, really exemplify our family bond. So we became the Ardorites. That was when we really started to make our mark on the world. Every day, there was a new raid being scheduled for some new tech for the club or something of the sort. Hell, if we were looking for something, we just went out for some good old-fashioned murder and advertising. I'm always looking for new visitors and employees.
If you don't mind, could you elaborate on what you mean by an expansion? I'd like to know what you really mean by that.
I don't mean anything outside of exactly what you're thinking. I'm nothing if not honest, after all. Anyways, Club Ardor has had two expansions. The first was four city blocks in a square. We demolished every single one of the buildings and slaughtered all of the inhabitants in order to turn the original bar into the first founding of Club Ardor. The second was when we had too many patrons for the smaller size of the bar, and I had gotten tired of being DJ and the club owner.
DJ? I'm sorry, I've never heard that term before.
Oh, it's short for disc jockey. I ran the music as well as the club, and it was quite the drain on me. One man can't do all that, so I decided that I would need a DJ. But for what could very possibly be the best nightclub in Kamora, I needed a man of prestige and of musical talent. So my Ardorites went out, scouring the materium for a man of quality, and they found it in a rogue trader named Samuel Moore. This guy knew music almost as good as I know it, but his sound was so rudimentary compared to what we had to offer. So I got around all my men, my ships, and I came in person to kidnap this man as the shining jewel of my new club.
And this was the cyborg I saw running the sound booth?
You betcha. He now goes by the alias of Threelk. He's been alive for maybe 1,000 years or better now. We picked him up in M40, and when he started to show signs of deteriorating, we rigged him up with everything we could to keep him going. Now he's basically more machine than man, and most of the machines are rigged directly into the music systems. He's got a level of control with the sound unlike anything you can comprehend. Oh well, maybe you could comprehend it, seeing as what you are.
I am a Necron, and yes, I certainly can comprehend it. Now what about your Ardorites? What makes them so special?
What doesn't make them special is the real question. Bodyguards, private army, club protectors, and patrons. But at the same time, they're crazy party animals. I only have a few requirements for a patron to become an Ardorite. Be devoted to the club in all aspects of your being. Love what you do for a living. Obey my word as if it was the word of God. And lastly, and most importantly, feel the music in every fiber of your dark, dreadful soul.
Feel the music? I don't.
Yeah, I know you don't follow. You'd have trouble feeling anything in that metal shell, wouldn't you? In that case, let me show you what I mean. Come, come.
We then stood up from his desk and walked down a hallway within his office, passing by many a brutal sculpt made of decaying remains. He then unlocked a large metal door, and it swung wide into a room filled with screens. Some of them showed activities within the club, activities too depraved for myself to write down within the confines of this article. But the screens toward the middle of this room showed footage of raids through cameras placed on Eldari ships and warriors. The cameras were shaking, and I noticed that the cameras still shook along with the beat of the music below. These raids were being live-streamed, and Mickey had access to direct his army as he saw fit from the confines of his lair in the club.
See how they work? How they fight? They're all feeling the music. Hell, even the folks there taking and killing are feeling it. Kinda hard for them not to, with how loud we blare the noise.
Sure enough, he was right. All the Ardorites were fighting with a lightning-fast, rampantly angry and brutally sadistic style. More so than almost any other Eldar fighting force I had seen before. They had no grace, no style, and were doing exactly whatever they saw fit. Some raiders were massacring anything they came across. Some were hooking chains into the flesh of their lessers. Some were throwing flyers for more club notoriety. And some were doing despicable things to their victims, with said victims still alive during the act. What is this?
Take that one alive!
He shouted into a microphone, and one of the Eldar snagged a beautiful young woman with a chain. It lodged into her leg, and she was reeled back, screaming into his grasp. Mickey then pressed a button on a large board of buttons and yelled into the microphone once more.
That's the plant! Take it, now!
Suddenly, another Eldar on screen leapt into action and took a strange-looking flower from an even stranger-looking tree. Suddenly, a massive dinosaur-like beast encroached around the tree and Mickey roared,
Run! Go! We can't afford to lose this plant!
The Eldar then turned and ran as fast as he could. Mickey then turned to face me.
This is where I oversee my operations. Wasn't it obvious?
No, I mean your soldiers. They move with no proper precision, no real incentive or direction other than mayhem. This is how you get things done?
Most of them are there for fun. They just got done with a go downstairs in one of the many pleasure pits, or maybe even farther downstairs, they were going nuts on some torture rooms. So, they get tired of that, shoot up as many hard drugs as possible, go to the third floor hangar, and take off on a raid, far a more fun high than usual. They don't know the objective as to why they went there. Only the captain of the raid does, and sometimes he knows, other times he's also whacked out on a space crack. So, so, I always make sure to oversee the operations. If the music blasting in their helmet stops and my voice cuts in, they know to get straight to business.
This is incredible.
I know it is. So, will this suffice for your interview?
I have only a few more questions to ask you, and then I shall leave your club.
All right, shoot.
What are the significance of the skulls on your office chair?
Oh, they belong to Archons. 2 times an Archon has either threatened someone within my club or threatened me directly. So I kill them, and I take their skull as proof that no higher-ups, save maybe one of Vex's top dogs, can tell me what to do. Their souls are still wailing inside the disco ball.
And that was going to be my next question. Why is it screaming?
Any Eldar killed within the confines of the building by one of my men will have their souls sucked into the globe, to sit in torment and watch the light show for all of eternity. I needed a better punishment for fuckers who tried to call the shots around me or break the rules of my club. Ever since I had it implemented, people think twice about breaking my codes.
All right, third question. When will your next expansion be?
When you can hear the screaming of the ball above the music, or when I get too many people for the club's confines again.
Right. Now, what do you think of the Yanari?
I left the craft world life behind me for a reason. I won't join a damn cult just to go back to what I never wanted in the first place, and neither will my Ardorites.
Who exactly are your Ardorites? Where do they come from?
Ardorites can be anyone from any walk of Eldar life. Be they a Kabbalite, a Homunculi, a witch, a Hellion, you name it. If they want a real family, they just need to come to Papa Mickey.
Lastly, to wrap up the interview, I would like one last statement from you, as a quote for the ending of the article I'm writing. So, Mickey, what would be your biggest goal for this universe and for yourself?
I got no intentions to be the leader of a district, nor a leader of a cabal, or anything of the sort. I'm convinced that this universe is dying, and I know for damn sure that as the universe creeps closer and closer to death, I'll just get more and more business. Ain't no point in trying to stop the inevitable. Only real choice is to profit off this hell till it croaks, and you can take that to the bank.
Thank you very much for your precious time, Mickey Masrovar.
Hey, you're one of the few folks I've met who's lived for longer than me. So trust me, pal. I got a hell of a lot more time than most.
We then shook hands, he gave me a flyer, and I left his office. Leaving the club, I was impacted by the sheer size of all I had just learned about Eldar life. Even the Lords of Sin and Vice still could go even darker and deeper into their debauchery than initially thought. Not only that, but these visceral raiders can be seen actually having familial values rather than simply murdering one another for a cheap thrill. I suppose what Mickey said is true. Enough hard drugs and enough wonderful sin can keep anyone enthralled. As I roved out of earshot of the deafening music, I realized, finally, the club's motto. Everyone who entered Club Ardor suddenly became another slave to its dark depravity. Had I not been a soulless machine, I most certainly would stay there as long as I could have, at least till I dropped dead on the dance floor. But even then, the end would not be there, as I would still be subjected to the noise and the lights and the motions of the club as a spirit within that dreadful ball. Flying out of the webway back into real space, I pinned the flyer upon the walls of my cockpit, knowing that I would never return to that dark place, only in memory. However, you, dear reader, if you are a being of sin and vice, there is no better place in the universe for you than Club Ardor. This article was written by Zeroth Mordrek, investigative journalist and reporter for Zeroth's Guide to the Universe, 597-M41, about the author. Zeroth Mordrek is a cryptic of a dead Necron dynasty. With no one else to answer to, he decided to get answers from everyone as a rogue trader with distinct ties to the Imperium of Man. Now a reporter, Zeroth is allies with nearly everyone and enemies with very few. He'd even interview a Tyranid, if they could speak. No story has a trail too hard to follow, and no corner of the galaxy is too far away for his Necron and his one-man cruiser. For this Necron and his one-man cruiser. He enjoys long walks upon night worlds, Jokeros, a great story to read, and even greater ones that still have yet to be written. And that's a wrap. Woo. That's a long story.
Wow. That was really nice to read.
It was fun to do it with you, actually.
Yeah, it
felt like we're...
Yeah, there was a good flow to it.
Yeah.
It was an audio drama.
So, first of all, so he is a Necron. He's part of a dead dynasty, the Morthek dynasty or Mortek dynasty or something. And he's going around the galaxy, I guess, just collecting stories.
Yeah, he's like a kind of an independent journalist.
Yeah, and this one led him to Kamora. What do you think? Do you like the way he portrayed Kamora? Do you like the idea of this Necron floating around? I don't know. What do you think?
I got a lot of thoughts. I'll go last here. Cause I
just share one.
No. It all flows together.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, I think it was an interesting concept. I think, like... I liked it. I mean, to write something that's that long, like that was probably what, half an hour? That
it was a solid half hour.
Yeah. So it had good flow to it, and
It kind of seemed like it felt like like if you remember, I don't know if anyone reads newspapers still, but if you remember like page, 28 of the newspaper, there'd be like some...
It felt like a mystery novel. It felt like I was
reading... What it was like in like a 1960s detective.
That's exactly what I felt.
Private Eye.
Yeah.
Even farther back.
I flicked my cigarette.
1920s.
And it had like some crazy music.
I guess so.
And like it was
that
like black and white.
That ties into what I was going to talk about. Yeah.
That's definitely a vibe. I saw the vibe I got the whole time. But there were some times I definitely slipped into, he's describing what it was like to be and seeing these sights. And I definitely felt that sometimes.
Yeah.
There was a noir vibe to it.
Yes.
Yeah.
That's the word, noir.
Yeah.
Even like some of the Lovecraft that I've read, similar kind of format to it, or the device that's used, the way that it's kind of that interview with like a starting and an ending. And it was like an old school format that I thought was interesting.
Yeah, it's also like a perfect like short story too.
Mm.
There's a lot of world building in of a dialogue,
and
which I really like.
World and character building too. So it's like a very... This guy should try and write for 40K.
Or
for Games Workshop.
It's not... Like, most of the stuff we receive is descriptive, and it just tells us information. And it kind of just... It could really just be like point form, really, but... A story like this, which we don't get often, that is really enjoyable to read, really.
And probably takes more effort to write.
Oh, way more.
As a credit to
the author. Descriptive writing is, And you know what?
Not that there's anything wrong with the other stuff. It's just this is another level of effort.
Yeah.
I mean, well, it sucks for whoever has to go next. To read their stuff. It's kind of a high watermark to start with.
Yeah.
I think from like a writing standpoint, a couple things that jump out to me as being really good in this story is when you're writing a conversation between two people, you want to make sure that their voices sound different. And so, I mean, he's got two different races, like alien races there, right? And so if they all sound the same, that's not good. And a lot of writers...
Yeah, like the way they talk is both very different.
So it was a great job.
Yeah, he used specific words.
The author, whatever his
name is.
Zareth. Is like a little more robotic, as he should be. And then...
The one's using slang.
Yeah. And then the Eldar guy is the,
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So you did his voice however you feel it was, right?
Yeah. Now,
it was hard to say. But as he's reading it, I got like a very different voice in my head than what Jordan was saying. So I don't know if that was you guys.
Are you criticizing the voice that Jordan used? I don't care.
I was just thinking, like, what would an Eldar sound like?
Yeah, that's tough. No, for sure.
And then you started speaking slang. You're like, wait a minute.
Yeah.
Wait, it's a hick Eldar?
No. Yeah.
But all I could think was, I'm going to make you an offer you can't refuse.
Okay.
Yeah.
So there's one line. Okay. I got no intentions to be the leader of a district, nor leader of a cabal or anything of the sort.
Yeah. Like
I'm convinced that this universe is dying. Like, that's how
it's a gangster. Yeah.
You just need a little sleazier, though.
I don't know if I can quantify sleazy.
But also.
Not so successful of a gangster. That's what you got
to
think.
This is not a criticism to you at all.
No, I know.
Okay.
I'm like, because I was kind of going in blind. I didn't read the story.
None of us have read it. So.
But the only thing I would say is, like, I think what maybe I would have thought more of that voice, but it was almost like this setting of like a rave setting.
Right.
I wasn't thinking like
19.
Yeah.
So there's a scene like in the Matrix. Yeah. There's a scene in the Matrix where Neo goes, follows the white rabbit to the club.
Right. Yeah.
And that's like, if that club was playing dubstep, that's what it would be.
Yeah.
Right. Cause I mean, I think they're playing like dig through the ditch, whatever that song is. Rob Zombie.
Yeah. Rob Zombie.
Yeah. That's what they're playing. Yeah. But if they're playing dubstep, that's like the vibe you would kind of get walking into this thing. Yeah. So enough about the story, like the particulars. Like, tell me about did it fit in the world? Like, how do you think he built this Eldar? Do you think it fit with your idea of an Eldar or the Necron? And like, I want to hear about that.
So that's where I kind of hit the wall the most. I didn't know it was a Necron unless it was explicitly said.
It was explicitly said right in the beginning.
Yeah. But like, kind of glazing over that and like getting into the story, like it started to lose that Necronness to it.
Okay.
I do enjoy the character. I like the little bio at the end. I was wondering if we were going to get that, because the whole time I was wondering, like, why is this Necron doing this? Why does he care?
Yeah.
And so the story at the end about the author really made it work for me, which I do like him as a character.
Okay. You just don't think it's a true representation of a Necron?
My bigger problem is with the Eldar. The way he's portrayed, so it is exactly that, not like mafia gangster pastiche, which I don't think necessarily fits. I get what he's going for. Even the character's name, Mickey Cohen,
was a
big mobster, right? And I swear this guy's playing LA Noir, because that's like totally the vibes I'm getting from this story. So you guys, the audience, obviously can't read it, but the way it's written is trying to be written like the same name, Mickey Cohen.
It's phonetically the same,
yeah,
but it's not written the same.
Exactly.
So. Yeah, which is one thing to consider, because when you're writing things, you're not necessarily thinking about it being read aloud in the format that you guys do. But obviously they're submitting it to this, and the listener lore is that. So that's something to consider, even for people who are writing their own listener lore, that it might... You've done enough to change it in how it looks when you're reading it in the print, but when it sounds like Mickey Cohen, you may want to actually change it a little more.
And actually, GW does this a lot with what we were just talking about earlier about Kimora and the way Eldar call humans monkey. It's supposed to be monkey, but when it's written out, it's monkeigh, right? So reading it, you don't really make that connection, but when you verbalize it as monkey,
you understand what they're actually going for.
Yes, And again, like there's a
phonetic level to what's happening.
Yeah.
But I don't think that really takes away from the identity of this Eldar in particular.
And he's also doing it in line with what GW does. GW set that precedent. He's just carrying it on. So I'm not pinning it on him for anything.
So you don't think this Eldar was Eldar-y enough?
It just seemed too 1940s gangster.
In my mind, that's all I could see. That's all I was picturing.
I think that's fair, knowing the names, Mickey Cohen is talking like a gangster, not like a...
So you see that as a detractor.
Yeah, it didn't... To me, it kind of pulled me out of 40K. And, I'm all for this stuff. Don't get me wrong. I love... 40K is hyper-derivative of everything. We were talking about this earlier.
Yeah.
So I'm not opposed to it. I don't know if it fits quite for the characters involved. If it was, some kind of human gangster, maybe that would work a little better.
The Eldar are just supposed to be so above...
Just something more alien.
Yeah.
Is kind of
than not a human historical.
Yeah.
I think that's tough. That's a tough criticism.
Yeah, that's fair. And I mean, all their characters pull from human cultures, right? Like this the tower, definitely space Japanese, right? Like there's some pretty manga.
Manga.
Anime is art. That's what Nathan would say if he was here. Sorry, Jordan, were you going to say something?
I was just saying like that. Yeah, the I kind of felt the same way as Christian. Like I wasn't sure how to pin this Eldar, who is like this sleazy bar owner, like because Eldar are like a high people, you know, almost like a classy kind of people, if you will.
They have the pinky out every
time. Yeah, exactly.
They drink.
Like, but at least that's my own stereotyping of the Eldar.
Yeah.
So, but yeah, I think it's fair, but I mean, it was still a good narrative for sure.
Yeah. Peter?
Yeah. So I have a question for you guys, because maybe you've read more of the Games Workshop books than I have.
I doubt it.
I
haven't read anything more
so,
than you.
Because you're talking about
anyone
like,
has read
the names and how they do that. And so do they often do things like describing things that we're familiar with, like a DJ or things like that, in a way where like the aliens are, you know, finding it out or needing to? Because I mean, that's something that happened in the story here.
Yes.
And I thought it was interesting at first, like the dubstep. But then when it got to the point of like describing what a DJ is, a disc jockey, it just felt like it was a bit much. But maybe that's just following a trend that already exists in some of the 40K.
First of all, with 40K, they have so many different authors that I couldn't give one answer for all of them.
Right.
Has it been done before, though?
Yes.
Absolutely.
It has been done before. Yes. And that's the thing that's so hard about this, is that where's that sweet spot of like, okay, it's two on the nose, and then where is the spot of like, it's... You get the reference.
A wink
you kind
at
of
the audience.
Yeah, you know what they're talking about, but it's still
not
different.
Not pulling
enough.
Them out completely.
Yeah, exactly. So, and there are moments in 40K, but in the past where that happens, and so it's still in line, I guess, with what has been done.
There is a lot of it in this one. I think if you were to be like, oh, why would he put so much in it? I think you can easily explain anything away personally. But it's not like he found like an ancient manuscript and it literally described a rave, right? Or the inside of a DJ. So like, obviously they don't have discs anymore. Like the word disc jockey means absolutely nothing to them. So like I might not personally have written it like he did, but it's
not unbelievable.
Yes, it is not unbelievable.
For sure.
Something I kind of wanted to go back to was your idea of like, you're not sure this Eldar actually fits into like an archetypal Eldar. So first of all, the galaxy is big enough for everything to exist.
Sure, yes.
Right. And second of all, there are Eldar that just completely deny who they are and go to live their own life and latch on to like the thing about being a dark Eldar is that you give yourself wholly to an idea, like you can give yourself wholly to an idea and like, go down the path of it till you're lost. Like that's, it kind of just feels like that's who he is. And like, this was just a natural progression. Like there's no way he was talking like that when he lived on the craft world. Right. It's just kind of, it's a persona that he's developed. I doubt this was how he was talking to when he was on the craft world. That's kind of what it feels like.
No, that's fine. It's more the language that's used. It's the way it's written. To me, all I hear is like a gangster, like specifically, it's like if a character, you know, started speaking in a very obvious accent, right? Like, say a Russian accent, and it's supposed to be this, like, pseudo-Soviet character, right?
But there is an accent that pervades almost all of, like, Games Workshop talks, and that's, like, the
British.
Brother. Yeah, it's a very, like, imperialistic, like...
I'm not saying...
And that's an accent that pervades everything. So
yeah, and orcs speak like, what do you call them?
Pirates?
No,
I don't know.
Street...
All I'm saying is that, like...
Ebonics?
Nope.
Because I'm not sure where you're going.
It's like the British...
Like Cockney?
Football. Yeah, Cockney, that's what I was thinking. Yeah, they have like a Cockney accent, football hooligan, like, way of speaking.
Yeah, I know it doesn't fit into the normal, but is that the problem with it? Just that it's not normal?
No.
Or you just
it's
too
on
familiar?
The nose. Yes, it's too familiar to me, personally. Just I feel like he just played L.A. Noire and is like, oh, that's a sweet... And even the format of like these interviews and stuff is just like... To me, it just screams too much.
Hmm.
And I'm not saying it's I'm just saying it's not maybe what I... It pulled me out, is sure. all I'm saying.
You wouldn't have written it that hard.
No, yeah. And, like, that I'm all for it. These nods, man. Like, I'm working on an episode all about it. I'm sure you know. But I'm all for the
Soon
nods.
TM.
Yeah. I'm all for the nods and the winking to the audience. I'm yeah, all yeah. for that stuff. I don't want to come off as, like, oh, you should never, you know, divorce it completely from reality. I love that stuff.
Peter.
I just think it was too much in this case.
Yeah, yeah, just going back to a positive, since Christian's just totally
Oreo it, you know? Oreo.
One of the things that I did like is it's not always easy when you're writing something to do a good job of the description and then switch into a conversation and then go back to description. So, like, what we often see is just a lot of description and nobody's actually even talking to anybody.
Right.
Or you'll just see, like, a conversation. But I thought he did a great job of moving between those two formats, which is more what you'd see in a novel.
An established writer.
Yeah.
From a technical perspective, this is awesome. Like, oh, yeah. I really
probably
enjoyed
one of the best ones we've ever read.
Definitely.
For sure.
It's fantastic.
Yeah.
And then I think... So
you took notes, Peter? Is that why you're looking at your phone?
Yeah, absolutely.
He did. The whole time, man.
I'm 100% in. So I get my question. I don't know if this is where you're going, but what did you think of the ending? And, like, as the story was going along, I felt like one of the hard things is in the middle of the story, I felt like it was kind of dragging for me in the middle of that interview process.
When they're in the office, but they're not in the special room yet with the screens.
Right, where I was just kind of going,
I feel that.
Where is this going? I don't know if I was hooked.
Are they, like, feeling each other out to get to the interview?
Continue reading? I was kind of just losing. The question I just kept asking is, like, what's the point? Why am I interested in this? That kind of component. And so then when we got to that kind of payoff at the end of them going out and fighting, and then even am I understanding it right? The souls are being sucked into
anyone who dies within the club, their soul goes into the disco orb, ball.
Yeah. Even
which would be like an Eldar
disco ball, like he uses it to describe it. Yeah. Sorry.
It's a little heavy handed.
Yeah. Okay. Carry on.
But yeah, so just what did you guys think of the ending to it? Do you think it accomplished what the story was setting out to do? And
yeah,
did the ending work for you?
Yeah, I like the ending, actually, to be honest. And I really liked, even as a warband, like in my mind, I could totally picture this as being a pretty
sweet. It's a cabal.
A sweet,
this guy has created a cabal
and it's unique.
Without being a cabal.
Right, exactly.
Which is interesting. It's more of a natural progression. It's a gang turned into a family, turned into a protection system, now turned into a gathering mercenary system, right? Like, it's
I love it.
Archons have come to kill him and he just kills them.
Yeah.
Right?
And yeah, I do love that, like, payoff at the end is, like, you noted at the beginning, totally Chekhov's gun, right? Like, oh, that's a strange orb there. Go into the interview, and then it concludes with, you know, responding. I enjoyed it. I agree it maybe dragged a little bit in the middle, but I think it's just him trying to, like, a lot of exposition.
Yeah, exactly. But there was a lot that he was trying to get across using the format of the interview, which at some points worked really well, and at other points I felt some of the questions were kind of unnatural or didn't kind of fit because there was more exposition to kind of get across.
Yeah, but in terms of the overarching story, I enjoyed it. I like the payoff at the end, personally.
I enjoyed it. That's solid
good.
For me.
It was good.
Yeah. There's no, like...
It was, like, nice to read.
Yeah. There's no story inconsistencies. Like, it's not like he's writing, Sanguinius's soul is actually trapped in this ball. Like, I fully expect every once in a while to run into someone who does stuff like that. But this, like, the only problems we have are, like, technical. Like, it's a little too much gangster accent, right?
It's
like,
that's the minor,
that's minor
part compared to how much we enjoyed the story.
One of the best things.
And so
I've
I want to do one last minor, just a little
criticism.
Yeah, well,
just a small criticism.
It just makes you better. You're refining.
No, I hate criticism. Honestly, like, criticism is terrible.
Oh yeah,
There's only a couple people that I willingly accept criticism from.
Yeah.
Mark is not one of them.
I just thought the question he's asking, he says, so Mickey, what would be your biggest goal for this universe and for yourself? That just seemed like an odd question. I don't know if this Necron, he concludes all his interviews that way. Maybe this is part of, like, a serialized story where it's like that's his big kind of punchy question at the end. But it just felt to me like asking, what's your goal for the universe? Is kind of an odd big question
Knowing his backstory though, and knowing the Necron, I actually don't think it's that strange. To
okay.
be honest,
help me to understand then.
Yeah, like so to me, this guy is kind of lost, and so he's looking for answers, universal answers.
Right? Xerath is lost.
Yeah, you know he's lost his dynasty and stuff, so he's looking almost for like a purpose in life. So he goes around interviewing characters from across the galaxy, and like his main goal, I'm sure he could have his own story arc.
Sure,
of,
sure.
Like, you know, interviewing these different pieces and characters, and I'd actually love to see this
searching
guy.
For even the
meaning.
Question.
Yeah, exactly. What is the meaning right. of my existence, and why yeah. do I function?
Do I even have a right. meaning?
So, yeah. and that's why he's asking this random club owner. He's like, "Hey," and I. It's weird. I've had these conversations with people sometimes in real life. They'll just drop a weird like life question on you, and you're like, "We're not talking about that at all." But no, I think it fits with the character and the Necron,
specifically the fact that he is a Necron. The so. Like, an Eldar is functionally immortal. Like, they're not going to die of old age, probably, that we've seen. But they are more likely to die. Like, this guy's life is under threat, right? So he does have, like, a shorter life than a Necron will. And so the Necron's perspective is immortality. And he truly believes that he's going to live to see the death of the galaxy or yeah, the universe, right? Yeah. So to him to ask this is, like, what's your goal? And if your goal is...
What are you
is,
doing next week?
Right. But more it's like, what are you doing 10,000 years from now?
Yeah.
Right? Like, maybe if he's around Gamora, he'll swing back and see, like, did you yeah. do it? Like, what have you accomplished? Has
Since
it been worth it?
Yeah.
Like, you gave me your purpose. Has it actually been fulfilling for you? Right? And then that's kind of Xerath's own goal is to find, like, what is his purpose and is he ever going to be fulfilled? It kind of feels like he's on the hunt and journey yeah. for something that can fill the empty soul inside of him. Nothing can, but that doesn't matter.
Yeah. No, I actually personally like that. I yeah. like this character a lot. Like I said, I don't know who wrote this.
Side Lightning.
Side, wherever you are, if you're listening to this.
Yeah, great job.
Write more with this guy. I like this character.
Yeah.
And build this Cabal. I'd like to see it on the tabletop.
Yeah, the Cabal. All right, fine. Let's talk about the Cabal itself. All like the hard drugs that they're using. Like the fact that there's no coordination.
Space crack?
Yeah, the space crack line was fantastic. I laughed pretty good at that.
Yeah, that's where it's like two on the nose for me.
Yeah. Obviously, no one calls it space crack.
Do you want space drugs?
Yeah. you want some death sticks? But yeah, like he has a really good flavor to his Cabal. Like, I hope he plays Dark Eldar, and I hope he actually has the Cabal of the Ardorite, right? Or but he doesn't
Sitting
call them the Cabal;
shelf, yeah.
he calls them just the Ardorites, right?
Like, yeah. No, I love it.
And just ramshackle. Yeah. I hope he like paints his like some of them just aren't wearing armor. Everything like nothing is uniform or anything.
Oh, he just pulls out like a giant boombox and sets it on the table and cranks it up to full volume.
Yeah.
Let's fucking do this.
Yeah. Anyways, yeah, it was really good world building.
Fantastic story.
All right, let's get into another. We're almost an hour in, and that was only one story. Let's. Who wants to read the next one? Christian, Peter,
sure.
Christian. Okay. All right. So this is a story submitted by Guy.
You're going to have to give me 2 seconds. I just got to scroll.
Yeah. You give her a close? I don't know what the battery life on that iPad is at.
46%.
Oh, you're
good. If this is not another hour-long story, then we should be good. All right. This is from Guy, and it's House of the Black Douglas. Cedric Douglas knelt on the cold slab floor of the simple chapel, his head bowed deep in prayer. Light streamed through the stained glass window above the altar he knelt before, illuminating the room in a rich mix of resplendent colors. The window depicted a stern-looking figure overseeing the chapel, clad in a suit of intricately made copper and gold Baroque armor. "Preparing for the rites of passage, young Cedric," a voice came from the door of the chapel. Cedric started from his deep prayer. The 16-year-old had been so lost in his head that he had not heard the preacher enter. "Indeed I am," Cedric said. As he rose and turned to face the intruder, "I fear that I have still not been able to decide which chapter I should attend for my rites, Preacher Lucas." Preacher Lucas moved out of the shadow of the doorway and into the colored light of the room. He was a wiry figure with close-cropped salt and pepper hair. Beneath his plain robes, he hid a well-scarred body from his time serving as a preacher in the guard. In his youth, Cedric had made the mistake of brashly challenging the older man to a sparring match, believing him to be an easy target. That belief was quickly shattered. Along with Cedric's forearm, and pride for that matter. Sorry, that was an awkward pause. Since young man to hone his mind and develop the necessary skills to pilot the blessed war machines of the Black Douglas. The choice is a difficult one, Cedric, but one that must not be made if you are to prove yourself to be worthy of the name you carry. I know, Preacher, Cedric paused slightly. Hesitation and fear clouded the young man's face. How can I choose only a single chapter of Dorne's Sons? My brothers had no such issues. Their choice was always clear to them. Diedrich always loved to fight, and if he wasn't in the fighting pits, he was in this very chapel praying. Now he returns gloriously from his rites of passage, bearing the sacred Templar cross on his gallant. And Temel has always said that the Emperor had made it clear to him since birth that he was to attend the Excruciators. Excoriators?
Yeah, but the Excruciator is an actual one, isn't it?
Anyway. Excoriators.
Excoriator.
And serve with them through their time of need in the Eye of Terror. He still serves them to this day. I have heard he no longer even repairs his knights to full glory. I have no such guidance. I have no such clarity. Cedric slumped into the nearby pews in defeat, head in his hands. Preacher Lucas took a seat beside him. My son, the Emperor gives light to all of us, even if he maybe don't see it as clearly as others. He gives us our lives meaning, the preacher began. Do you know the reason why we have the rites of passage, young Cedric? Cedric shook his head. Of course he knew the tale. All pilots of the house did, but he always enjoyed hearing the preacher tell it. Through his subtle guidance, Rogel Dorne and his loyal sons discovered our planet during our direst hour. Our fortress was beset on all sides by a vicious orc menace. Their wah had grown to a great size and had overcome many of our knights. The villagers had taken refuge in Douglas Castle, and only a few of our greatest knights remained in the field. They were holding the wah at bay, through grit and determination, exemplars of the household, but even they knew it was a losing battle. The foul Xenos crashed wave after wave into our defenses, in some disgusting display of barbarity, as if they were trying to clog our guns and scale our walls using the bodies of their slain. Their numbers seemed without end. It was then that a miracle occurred. That's when, in our time of need, Dorne and his sons came to us. The bright yellow drop pods came screaming from the sky, crashing into the battlefield, sowing confusion into orc hordes at our gates as the marines spewed forth a violent and terrible death to the foul Xenos. I was at this point that our knights seized the opportunity and started to push the orcs back with the aid of the marine battle line. Working in unison, we scoured the orcs from this planet in such a way that they have never rose up in such force in 10,000 years. The vengeance wrought upon the orc kind in those times is still legend. Cedric's head was filled with visions of the battle described to him, in the way only a young man can. What a sight that must have been. The Imperial Fist Legion fighting here, on Ventos Prime. The thoughts of ancient glory clouded his thinking. He came here himself, you know, Preacher Lucas continued. Rogel Dorne, he blessed our humble castle with his presence, walked within these very halls. So much of our house is owed to him. That very day your ancestor, Haemon Douglas, swore an oath of fealty to the Imperium that day, at the feet of Rogel Dorne. He also made a second oath, recognizing Dorne and his holy chapter for saving us. It is this oath that requires all knights of our house to swear a personal oath of honor and serve alongside his chapter. Only when the knight has proven his worth as an honorable warrior to the chapter is the oath considered fulfilled. The preacher stood up and walked towards the stained glass window. Only then can he gloriously return to serve this household. The preacher's voice was starting to get louder. He turned and looked directly at Cedric. Only then can he paint the colors and symbol from the holy sons of Dorne onto his knight, his voice building to a crescendo. Only then is he eligible to become a leader of our people, a glorious figurehead to all, a living embodiment of the greatness of this household. He finished, his fanatical voice raised to the absent masses of the chapel. Cedric stared past the preacher into this ever-judging eyes of Rogel Dorne in the stained glass window. He would never be able to forget those eyes. They had looked over him every day of his life, and every day he had seemed to find him wanting. It was then that a sudden clarity came over Cedric. The simplicity surprised him. How had he not realized earlier what his purpose was? It was so obvious. If he was to ever become worthy of the judgment of Rogel Dorne, he would have to prove himself to the original sons of Dorne. He must swear his oath and fight alongside the Imperial Fists themselves if he was to ever feel worthy of being judged by the venerable Primarch's gaze. "Thank you, Preacher," Cedric began. "It is clear now who I must swear my oath to. It is clear that I must prove my worth to those original sons. The founding chapter, fighting with the Holy Imperial Fists, is how I must gain my honor." The elderly preacher nodded. "A wise choice, young Cedric. I'm sure your father will approve of your choice. You should go now and inform him of your choice. I will prepare the chapel for your ceremony of undertaking." Cedric rose and exited the chapel. He turned and looked back at the overbearing visage of Rogaldorn in the window. He felt a mixture of fear, pride, and excitement swell within him as he stared at the figure, eager to fight in the name of the household to end Rogaldorn. Cedric's thoughts turned to what would happen after he made his oath. He would depart immediately to present himself and his knight to the Master of the Imperial Fists. The chapter master would judge him then and consider if he was worthy to fight alongside the chapter and show his honor. No greater shame could be brought upon his household than if they were to judge him unworthy of fighting alongside them. The currently unpainted knee armor of his knight would remain forever unpainted. He would never be able to return to his household. He would be cast out, never be able to fulfill his oath. Cursed to roam the galaxy alone in dishonor, just like his uncle Beregond. Sigrid caught himself and immediately cast the thought from his mind. To even mention Beregond's name anymore was heresy. The shame pilot had been found unworthy by the Master of the Crimson Fists, and rumor had it he now fought against the Imperium alongside the Hordes of Chaos. Cedric steeled his mind as he made his way to the Great Hall to see his father. He was resolute in his determination that the fate would not befall him. He would return to his household in glory, or in death. There was no other path for him. Of this, he was certain. End.
All right. Thank you, Christian, for reading. That was Guy's story. Thank you so much. All right. Now, thanks for listening to this midnight showing of Listener Lore. No, I'm just kidding. So it's a story of a young man and he's a knight pilot, obviously. Yeah. He's about to go ask for permission to fight alongside a Space Marine chapter, which would be a pretty big deal.
Yeah. Yeah.
But he swears, it sounds like he's like swears fealty to them almost.
Yeah.
Which is an interesting
taking an oath. Yeah.
Yeah. Cause I don't think that normally happens. Normally they're more under the purview of the Mechanicus knights.
They're more independent.
They're
like
independent.
They can be either or mostly.
Yeah. I'd say they're more closely.
I wish Mark was here for this.
They're more closely tied to the Mechanicus than they are chapters.
Yeah. Like Space Marine specifically, there's a bigger gulf than.
Yeah, for anything. Sure. I like the story of Rogaldorn coming because I bet that story is not how it happened at all. No, just think.
Now I think you're reading into it.
No. This is how I kind of like to imagine it, right? Like that's like a beautiful story, right? Like what an amazing thing, you know, they crashed from the sky and then we rallied our forces. But in my mind's eye, I'm like, that's not how it happened at all. No.
Well, how else could it have happened?
No, I just like
it. You're talking about the difference between how history remembers.
That's exactly
things.
What I'm
sure.
About.
I think you're just reading.
Like that's an interesting.
It's a deconstructionist approach that you're taking. Which sure. You just, know, if you want to, but
just
you can do that with
line.
Anything and never trust any text you ever read. But I don't think this is what the author's intent.
Text.
Yeah, exactly.
I don't care if that's his intent or not. It's just that when I'm thinking about this battle, I'm thinking about the fact that this story has been passed down for 10,000, like nothing is passed down for 10,000 years. We don't have stories that are 10,000 years old. 10,000. Word of mouth stories, 10,000 years old.
Sure.
Right? That's what I'm saying is that's a very long time. I just like to think that
they have cleared
those 6,000 year old stories, crap, garbage. Yeah, no.
It's too new, these young.
I just like to think about the fact that there's like a 10,000 year history of his, like every single son is told this story.
Yeah.
Every single son has to swear an oath to some chapter. That's a lot of.
How many times have they had to change out that stained glass? I mean, that's a lot.
Right?
Time.
Yeah. No, and every time it gets like slightly more heroic. Right? No, I mean, it is a Primarch. It's going to be as heroic as it gets day one.
I enjoyed it. I think I'm going to be Mark's voice in this because he loves has voices, his opinion often on this topic.
His voice from prison.
His prison voice, yeah.
Please don't hurt me.
That's his prison voice.
But anyways, there seems to be, this is like for more lore and tabletop. A lot of people like to field knights alongside their Space Marine chapters. I personally even like to do that too. But it's definitely a pet peeve of Mark's when people paint them in the colors of a chapter and treat them as part of the chapter. And I think this is this guy's way of kind of like marrying those two ideas. He really wants to field a knight and Imperial Fists on the tabletop together. And he wants his knights to be associated with it. I think this guy does it in a good enough way that I don't have a problem with it. But I definitely think someone like Mark, who's probably listening to
you
this.
You think so?
I think he would have a thing to say about
I have a
stop putting your knights in my Imperial
Fist. I have a story of how my Grey Knights fight alongside with a knight. And that knight is actually painted as the Grey Knight's armor is.
Yeah.
Like, I don't...
And Mark hasn't said anything to you?
No, he actually enjoys it.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Maybe I'm wrong.
Like, there's... I think there are ways of doing it without saying, this is an Imperial Fist.
Piloting.
Yes. No, there's... Like, you need to understand that there is a separation between a knight house and a chapter, and in no way are they like
the same thing.
Yeah, they don't hold hands at all, like
pilot each other's vehicles.
Yes, yeah. No, like the knight house, the knights in a knight house are not joining the brother fraternities of a chapter at all.
Yeah,
right. Like they're still separate. They just are alliances on the field of battle and war. So I think if you do it that way, and you don't try to say like they're integrated.
Yeah, which at first I thought this was a story of a guy going to be a Space Marine, and then I'm like, well, that's not really how that happens. Deciding what chapter he wants to be a part of.
It was a good little trick they got me too.
They got my goat.
Yeah, they got the goat was got, as you say. No, I don't think that's a huge deal, and I personally don't think Mark will have a problem with this one. I think sure, we've seen and heard worse ideas.
Yeah,
that with this one he'll be fair. Like, that's actually not that bad.
Yeah, you know? And that's what I'm kind of saying is like I personally don't have an issue with the way it's done. It's a way to marry those two things together on the tabletop without, you know, being heavy-handed.
Yeah. The idea that also at some point he'll leave.
Yeah, right. It's right? Only temporary. He'll,
yes. Yeah. Once his oath is fulfilled, he will come back and serve his people.
As a regular knight.
Yeah.
Which is cool, too. Yeah, I like that.
Only those who have fulfilled their oath can become leaders of their people.
Yeah, it's short and sweet, and it's fairly well written. Yeah,
no. It's not even that short. This is like our normal. It's just that last one was so
long. It felt short.
It wasn't that short.
No, it's like
it felt 12 super short. Minutes.
Yeah.
It was good. You enjoyed it?
Yeah, I had a little bit of everything. I like the young protagonist, right, trying to make up his mind, getting some advice from a wise...
A real hero's journey is art.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah,
I was going to say it's like a call to adventure and then crossing the threshold, basically.
Right.
Yeah.
There's
the
formula.
Mentor figure in there, you know.
Yeah, and the guide figure, yeah. Right. It was definitely well written. I didn't feel like pulled in too much into the story. It just seemed very generic to me, the actual story. That's my only
gripe
with it. Yeah, so
you have to be a real knight fan or Imperial Fist fan to really. Yeah.
So the Excoriators is an actual second founding chapter.
Yeah,
written like
I
that
just
too.
Didn't, no, yeah, I just didn't know how to. I was reading it. My eyes were moving faster than my mouth.
Yeah,
yeah. No, I mean it's cool that it integrates. Like some of the actual like history around knights and stuff like that, but like the just the structure of the story itself is like it's like simple, yeah. You know. So, but it was like well done,
good for an omnibus. Nice little short story for an omnibus.
Yeah,
I wonder. So they got to go to these chapters, right? And it says they're going to go to the chapter master. How realistic do you think that is?
Knight houses are a pretty big deal.
I know they are, but are they chapter master worthy?
Yeah, I don't. Or whoever's available to, right? Like
that's
maybe
what,
the chapter master's like, I'm spread out across the galaxy.
That's what I'm more thinking.
Go to this
like,
company captain. Yeah.
Who is giving this, like, this knight house? They must have resources and ships capable of traveling the void.
Yeah.
Right? So that means warp drives. So that means astropaths, right?
Yeah.
So it's like, does this knight house own these extra resources?
It wouldn't be crazy to think that because they transport their own knights even.
Do they?
Planet to planet.
Or does Mechanicus do that? I don't know. I don't know enough. But it would be kind of cool to know, like, maybe Mark would even have that answer for us, actually.
Probably screaming at the podcast right
you
now.
You losers!
Normally it's me, but this time it can be Mark.
Yeah. No, yeah, that it's kind of just an interesting thought. Like, what are the logistics of him actually traveling to this chapter? Like, or, like, what if in the meantime, like, something terrible happens to... Because there's... I'm just on the list. There's, like, a lot of different of the Sons of Dorne. I mean, this is a pretty prolific. So there's a chapter called The Fists of Wrath. Yeah. What if in the time frame of you leaving your planet to go to the Fists of Wrath, they're all wiped out?
Yeah.
Like, it's not uncommon for an entire chapter to be destroyed, right? Like, I wonder, like, what does he happen? Does he go on a quest? Or
there's room for stories.
Yeah, there's a lot of cool...
Kind of on your note about, like, is a chapter master too important? I do like how they put the onus on the knight to go find him, too, right?
Because it's different like than saying... It's almost like a quest.
Yeah, it's different than saying the king has to come to me to get my approval, but me going to the king and being one of hundreds, if not thousands, of other petitioners, Imperial Guard commanders, you know, knights, households. Like, he's just one of... To the chapter master, this is, like, some side story. Like,
yeah, it's...
Some kid asked him to fight alongside.
To
okay,
the chapter
cool.
master, it's just a knight.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, oh, he doesn't have weapons that can do the same thing as a knight? Like, get real.
Yeah.
So it truly is a matter of honor that he's doing this. He's not doing it because he's like, oh no, you need me, right?
Yeah, exactly. He's putting in the legwork. He's the one trying to prove himself. The chapter master is like, you know, he'll either use him or not use him. It's totally up to him what his needs are.
Yeah,
but that's
it's like a judge moment.
Yeah, exactly.
I didn't really dive into that aspect of it, but I enjoy that's worth thinking about. Yeah. I think is the amount of work he'd have to put into.
Yeah, like that in itself could be a whole story of...
You think like he has to prove himself to the Imperial Fist before he even asks, right? Like he'll just...
Yeah, like...
Like he'll, on his quest to do it, he's like, I did this and this and this. Like, I'd like to do this for your chapter, right?
Yeah.
That's an interesting idea.
Yeah, yeah. There's a lot of potential for expansion, for sure.
Yeah, I like at the end of the story how he raised the stakes as well. Like that his uncle wasn't able to complete his oath.
You're stepping real close to heresy now, Peter.
We don't talk about
I'm
him
sorry.
Anymore.
Well, I didn't name him.
Oh, good. Okay.
I'm not that much of a rebel. but no, I just like that someone close to him was shamed.
Yeah, this isn't like a distant great relative over the past 10,000 years. Yeah. This is someone he would have known.
Personally.
Right?
Yeah.
Who is given over to chaos, right? Yeah. And the shame that house would feel at that.
Yeah. And that shows the stakes involved, like you
exactly.
said.
Exactly. Yeah. As he's setting out in this, it's the risk that this could go very poorly. It was great.
Hmm. Yeah. So we're a little over an hour in. Let's, like hour 15. Let's do one more. Let's, do you have time after this? You got anywhere to be when we're done recording this?
My bed.
Okay.
You can do this?
Let's do that one. Let's do another episode. One. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Let's do one specifically for that. We're going to do another one here. Submitted by Mackey.
Yeah. I read it Macy.
Yeah. Same here.
This is a short word.
You want to read this one, Peter?
Yes.
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 Please.
Yes. This is by Macy. Dark Angels, Nightwing Company. With the introduction of Primaris Marines to the chapter and the distrust of Inner Circle. Something had to be done with them.
Oh, you got one of the fun ones.
After two of like really good writing. It's really... Yeah.
The Inner Circle created a section of the Third Company. The Nightwing are tasked with the most brutal and dangerous fights and missions the Green Wing will face. Fighting many long and brutal battles, the Nightwing earned the attention of many veteran officers. After countless trials, several Primaris officers are allowed a limited access to the Deathwing, these officers called the Angels of the Night. The Nightwing specialize in sleight-of-hand tactics, such as deploying several ground units to hold up fortified locations, dropping brutal reavers behind the enemy, or deploying squads of jump troops to flank and push the enemy into the firing lines of the fortified positions. The Nightwing tend to be infantry-oriented, utilizing battle brothers for any and every situation they are thrown into, eager to continue proving their place among their older brethren. company leader, Warpstrider. After a fight with orcs defending a stronghold in Classified, battle a large chaos warband storms the fortress. The fight lasted days. Company lieutenant looks up from the carpet of bolster casings. The wall with his flank explodes. Slightly staggered by the blast, he looks back up. A champion of chaos sprinting towards him, the unit of hellblasters to his rear unleash a fury of plasma. Battered, but still lumbering towards him, the champion of chaos cries out for blood. Raising his plasma pistol, he lets off two shots, but no such luck. The champion bashed him to the ground. Raising his axe high, the champion means to end him quickly. Raising his plasma pistol, he blasts the traitor right between his eyes. As the traitors start to flee, a warp rift roars across the sky, as if the dark gods themselves are screaming. The warp rift tearing large chunks of the planet apart. Most of the company escape to the Storm Ravens and tear away, however Strider and several of his brothers sucked into the warp. 100 years later, a Dark Angel's distress beacon is discovered. 3 stasis pods are discovered containing Strider and 2 of his battle brothers. After woke from stasis, Strider is interrogated on what happened. After the interrogation, he is promoted to captain of the company and gifted with a lion's roar and a mace of redemption and brought into the inner circle. Standing at the forefront of the Nightwing company with his guard at his side, spearheading the Dark Angels campaigns.
All right, okay. This is a story of a section. I'm assuming the Nightwing is that. So I'm not super Dark Angel.
Dark Angels Nightwing Company.
I'm not super Dark Angel guy. I haven't really like looked into like the intricacies of how they act. So take this with a grain of salt, Macy. So the Nightwing Company, does that already exist, Christian?
No.
Okay, so he created this Nightwing Company, and it sounds like all the Primaris have been put into this Nightwing Company.
That, yeah, I'm not super clear. I don't know if it's supposed to be a chapter calling themselves the Nightwing.
No.
They are a chapter of the Dark Angels.
No, they're a company.
A company in the Dark Angels.
It's like the Grey Shields that were given to the Dark Angels, and they're like, we don't trust them, so put them all alone. And then proving themselves, a couple of them join the Deathwing. Which is the Deathwing. Aren't they all on bikes?
They're the Terminators.
They're the Terminator. Oh, is that like the first company?
Yeah, first company.
Okay.
But they're all Terminators.
So a couple of them are allowed to join as veterans in like what is the most prestigious, like everyone wants to join the first company.
Yeah.
Right? So these Primaris are then allowed. Sleight of hand tactics? What is that?
Deception. Like making your enemy think.
Yeah.
Guile.
One way. Yeah.
You're
looking over here when you really should be looking over here.
That was my first thought. Like this Dark Angel just has like a bunch of cars and he just threw them at the enemy's face.
But he throws it so hard it actually like kills them.
Yeah, no.
Is this your card?
Yeah. So I like the idea of, because that was a true thing. You know, a lot of chapters did not like the inclusion of these Primaris Marines and kind of forced to prove themselves through the Indominus Crusade. So I could see the Dark Angels doing that. They're a pretty secretive chapter. So that's kind of describing the tone, right? He's describing the tone and the fact that, you know, these Dark Angels had to prove themselves so much harder than everyone else just because of all the distrust that came with them. So that's interesting. I think that fits.
Yeah, personally. I like them. They have a unique taste. Like the
you were tasting them. Yes. Now, hey,
like the Dark Angels, each company has like their thing that they're good at, like the Deathwing, the Raven Wing, like they're all on bikes, and they don't really have like a sleight of hand tactics group.
Yeah,
so that's cool.
This, like, could be like their,
yeah,
flair.
And you don't get that a lot of people like to be frontline Space Marines of like, yeah, our Space Marines are, you know, X and Y, but
fortified positions, yeah, bombardment,
exactly,
firing lines.
Straight from the front, right?
Yeah.
So to want your guys to be more stealthy and a little more like manipulative.
As an 8-foot tall Space Marine can
be. Sure, yeah, talk to the Raven Guard. But Yeah, so from that angle, I do quite like them.
Yeah.
And I do like them as
it's a unique flavor added. It's not just another of squad the same. Of Ravenwing.
Yeah, yeah, right? Exactly.
Yeah. So then after that, after he kind of gives us, after Macy gives us the flavor, kind of goes into like a story of Strider.
Warp Strider.
Warp Strider. Is that his name?
That is his name, yeah.
Warp Strider. It's cool. It gives a little flavor of him fighting this champion of chaos. I got nothing wrong with that. It's kind of...
Yeah, two quick vibes I get from the name.
Is it... Oh, from the name?
Yeah. So the Dark Angels... I don't know. Macy, I don't know like how long you've been in the hobby or stuff. The Dark Angels used to actually have a like Native American theme. Oh, actually, the Deathwing did specifically. So they had some really like Cloud Walker and like... names like that, so it does kind of fit in that context of Macy, you know, if you were a fan from way back
if that's
when.
A throwback. Yeah,
yeah. They don't do that so much anymore. They've really diverted. Their names are a lot more like angelic names, like Azrael and stuff like that. So I don't know if the name necessarily fits in that context, unless it's a throwback to like
the
back in the day.
The interesting thought is that originally this could have been a gray shield,
right? And he was named before.
Yes, exactly. He wasn't necessarily a part of the Dark Angels.
Yeah, and I do get like some Lord of the Rings vibes, Strider, you know, mysterious ranger type.
Yeah, yeah.
And then you know you put it marry that to the context of the wing itself being like all stealthy.
Everyone under the wing, you know, get under the wing and protect you. Yes. Yeah.
Criticisms I have.
Okay, so in the very last part. Where are we? Okay. Most of the company escaped to the Storm Ravens and tear away. However, Strider and several of his brothers sucked into the warp. No problem there. I'm sure that happens, right?
Yeah, you walking your dog and all of a sudden...
Right, yeah.
Sucked into the warp.
Right, as parts of the planet are also being torn away, right? I'm just saying, like, when you're
yeah,
in 40K.
Yeah. It definitely has happened.
Here's... the interesting thing. 100 years later, a Dark Angel's distress beacon is discovered. 3 stasis pods are discovered containing Strider and 2 of his battle brothers. Are these alien stasis pods? Are they chapter stasis pods? We know that Space Marines themselves can go into a coma-like effect, but that, like, what you're describing sounds like they're waking up in like a cryo from like a cryo sleep in like a specific cage, which is like the Dark Angels are like the most distrustful chapter to ever exist.
Yeah.
Like you nailed it on the head when you originally created it that they didn't even like gray shields. They're like, we distrust you so much, you can't even fight with us.
Yeah.
It's like that line from Mean Girls, like you can't sit with us. That's what the Dark Angels were like, right? And so then you're gone for 100 years in the warp. In the warp.
You come out in a stasis pod.
Right, you come out in an unknown stasis pod.
And they just take your word for it.
And they're like, oh man, welcome back, Warp Strider.
We promote you.
Yeah.
You're a captain.
Now you're leading the entire Nightwing company. That seems like it needs a little more
work.
Yeah, you need to tell us, like, did they torture him to find out what happened? Was it, did someone like scour his mind to make sure there was no warp taint in him, right? Like, is this even the same Space Marine that came back?
Yeah, is this a demon trick? Is this,
yeah, exactly. It just, from the Dark Angel's perspective, like, I get that he might have even been a hero before this, but if anyone leaves for that long and comes back, they are not
major questions.
Yeah, yes. Huge red flags.
Yeah, to me, that part doesn't sit well at all. I don't think it would happen.
The only reason why I think we have an issue with it right now is because there's no middle part to that.
Yeah, just as interrogation. It doesn't really say enough.
What was that?
Like, did they just sit him in a room and they were like, oh, okay.
What happened?
Yeah. Oh, he was just in a stasis pod. Oh, thanks for coming, Strider. Glad to have
checks
you back.
Checks out.
Yeah, checks out.
Story checks out.
Yeah. So I think if you want to put him back into your company, which is totally fine if you want to, like I have no problem with it, there needs to be a better description of why he's allowed back in. Build off of the flavor of distrust that you had in the very beginning and amp that up to 11. Right. Talk about how, I don't know, like he was like 2 Dark Angel veterans had to like follow him for like 50 years in battle and everything to constantly, like, one was a chaplain and one was a librarian or something, and they watched him for 50 years to make sure there was no sign of corruption or taint on him, or make it so they threw him in the rock, right? And he had to sit there and meditating upon the words of the emperor for 200 years or whatever before he was allowed back in or something.
Yeah.
It's just, there's not enough of the Dark Angel feeling that you included in the first bit. And I think you can really amp it up if you include a little more of that.
Yeah. And the final thing I would say, just as a criticism, is just staying away from major chapters altogether. Making your own wing.
I know.
I do, honestly, I do like this idea.
Yeah.
And don't get me wrong. I actually do like the way he implemented it. But anytime you're starting to, like, drop, you know, established groups, and then, like, you're putting your own twists on it, it gets into a lot of, like, Mary Sue, Snowflake territory, which...
Like, I know exactly what you're talking about. I think that's a weird line to play with, especially when we're doing this, because then what? No one is allowed to, like, write.
Yeah, I'm not saying don't do it.
Yeah,
I'm just saying it's best practice not to.
I know. It's tough. Yeah. It's why, you know, Mark creates his own Nighthouse, right? And you create your own chapter, and I create my own dynasty, right? Because we don't want to deal with the fact that if you were an Ultramarines chapter, you'd create characters and stories about things that technically never actually happened with the Ultramarines.
Yeah, and doesn't exist anywhere outside of my own head.
Yes, right? which is a huge problem.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it's your models. Right? You do what you want with them.
Yeah. But in the end, like, I think there's a freedom that you're allowed that you can really enjoy and expand upon if you don't pick one of these established chapters. But there's a level of complexity that you can really add into the flavor of your chapter if you write from one of these established. Because you can write a successor chapter of the Dark Angel, and it can literally just be the Dark Angels, and that's boring.
Yeah.
Right? You want them to be sufficiently different from someone else that they lose the flavor of what you liked, which was the Dark Angel. So I think there's a weird line there. It's just, it seems that all of us, and us as in, like, you, me, and Mark, we like things where we have more freedom. And other people really like to cement.
I really
stay
like
in.
Ultramarines. I really like Dark Angel.
Yeah, no, exactly. Yeah. Enough that I want to write within that. And this is an interesting idea. We can explain this away however we want, but there is, like, a danger. You're right, to writing like that. And I agree.
Yeah,
I
that's
agree
all I'm 100%. Saying. It's like it's usually not the best approach. Yeah.
Like, it's probably not good to ever include Asriel in your stories.
Yeah.
Right? Like, it might be fun and everything, but if you include him, like,
we know where he was at this year.
Yeah.
At this time, he just wasn't.
It takes away.
Yeah. So that, like, personally, I would just make my own chapter.
I know. That's our go to.
Yeah. Although I honestly do like his.
The Nightwing.
I don't know if Macy's
the Nightwing
girl, but.
Yeah. The Nightwing company is cool.
Yeah. I actually do like the way they would be implemented and stuff. Like, it makes sense and it fits in with the chapter, but just, again, generally not a good idea to mess with established lore. Generally.
And I'm with you on that one.
Yeah.
I don't care. He can do what he wants.
Macy, be your own person.
You're a free thinking absolutist.
Within 40K. Yeah.
Well, the Emperor was actually a Chaos God the whole time.
And yeah.
He was, you know, the Primarchs were really all.
Malkador was actually the true power
behind the Emperor. The Emperor is just a figurehead.
He's a puppet.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Malkador was truly the one.
That's my lore now.
Perfect. It's an interesting idea to think about, actually, if you follow the progression.
Let's not get derailed here.
anything else?
Just make a 40K multiverse.
No.
The cinematic universe versus the books versus the comic books versus the tabletop game. Actually, they do kind of have that with the video games. Sort of. Not really.
It's they exist in the world, but are they technically part canon? Like,
yeah. Dawn of War, kind of.
Yeah.
Fair enough.
I won't get into it.
So that was 3. We are going to end this episode right here. We're done. Anyone have any more things to say? Yeah. So, okay, guys, that was our Listener Lore 6. Remember, if we haven't read yours yet, we just got a backlog that we're trying to work through.
These were submitted in 2012, it looks like.
Well, yeah, the timestamps.
Yeah.
M2.
Yeah.
012 M2. That's when these are. Anyways, thank you guys for listening. And we'll see you next time.
See you.
See you later.
Cheers.